Your SteveJonesShow.com audio is coming up next. Audio and podcast of The Steve Jones Show, a service of Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is The Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
It is the Steve Jones Show here on WKOK. Steve Jones will be in the Sunbury Motors studio within moments. It takes a day off and then becomes a slacker. You know, if I were to do that, he'd have a fit, wouldn't he? Lots of stuff to talk about today, including the blue-white game, which is coming up tomorrow here on WKOK. If you're not going to make it out to Beaver Stadium, you can hear it beginning. Parking is free, and so is the game, and Steve is in studio. Slav, he gets a nice little honor, and all of a sudden, too big for the show now. You know, I said when we started, I would...
Drew Kelly, yourself. I hope Roger got a chance to talk with Jack.
He did. The gold included into the broadcast center, which is fantastic.
School in the country when it's all said and done. And that's what makes it so special what Rick and Sue Berry have done. And, you know, it was interesting because I spent a lot of time with Bill O'Brien today and yesterday. Said to by Jack.
Drew Kelly tweeted some photos that if you...
800-795-9565. That is our number to call if you'd like to join in on the conversation. And I would love to talk. And, of course, we have Penguins Flyers, too. Penguins Flyers, a lot to talk about there. Can the Penguins somehow come back? They have home ice, which has just meant a tremendous amount in the series. And that is tonight.
Well, the game the other day, 7 power play goals. Look,
ground is up.
Talk to Gore Brian. As I said earlier, I'm still very interested in the offensive line. What an Andre.
Really biggest one. So, yesterday, one phone call later, we're in.
Whilst in town.
Yes. The game's delayed?
What game's delayed?
The Red Sox game?
Today's game?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I'll take your word for it. I don't know. I didn't
see
that.
Now they say top of the first. I guess they're finally starting, but they had a big ceremony today, and you know.
Yeah.
You know, Babe Ruth played at Fenway Park.
I guess my question is, as somebody who's unfortunately never seen a game at Fenway, I do understand the history of it. I get it. I'm not saying anything negative about Fenway Park. My question is, as a fan and as somebody who's been at Fenway, what is it that makes Fenway such a classic ballpark and not an old ballpark? Do you understand what I mean?
Well, let's start with the left field wall. I mean, the left field wall, there's nothing like it in baseball. Anywhere. Other people try to replicate it in some ways, like the right field wall at PNC Park being 21 feet high. But the left field wall, down the line, it's only 310. All the angles to this park. You know, when you get out to the triangle in center, which is 420 feet from home plate, the bullpen's 380, but it wraps around to the pesky pole, which is 302. There's hardly any foul territory, 60 feet. And it's filled. Now, they weren't always sold out. We're not always sold out. I mean, I could go and get tickets anytime I wanted. I remember the first time getting bleacher tickets there for $1. That was a big deal to me when they increased it to $2. You know, I was just a kid at the time. And the first time I went to Fenway Park, I was 5 years old, 1963. First time. Grandfather got tickets. And, you know, I went, my mom's Uncle Jesse went. I remember him buying us peanuts outside the ballpark. Right? I mean, fresh roasted hot peanuts.
They're the best. That's the way you have to watch a baseball game.
Right. Well, it's, you know, so I'm five. They're playing the Yankees. And my dad was a huge Yankees fan. Big Mickey Mantle fan. And Mickey Mantle and Roger Maris both homered in this game. And when Mantle hit one, he hit it right-handed over the screen in left field. I never saw my father jump that high in his life. I mean, really, because, I mean, that's, you know, in other words, everything, you know, he wanted to see Mantle hit a home run. He did. He did. And that's what they wanted to see. And, I mean, they were talking about tearing it down and building a new Fenway Park in the 90s. Was always against it. But it's filled. The fans are knowledgeable. And they're critical, too. But there's a passion in there. I mean, one of the great trivia questions is, who holds the record for the most wins by a Red Sox pitcher at Fenway Park? Or actually holds the record for the just most of wins as a pitcher at Fenway Park?
Babe Ruth.
Nope.
Am I at least, was he at least in the top 10?
Ruth won 96 games in his total career.
Oh, okay. Well, then probably okay. Not.
Total career. This guy, probably this, not then. This guy won 98 games at Fenway Park.
Wow. I don't know. That was going to be my most intelligent guess. And I don't know how intelligent it was, but that was the closest I could get.
It's actually closer to modern times than you think.
Now, give me the question again. Was it a Red Sox or does it? Or
no, it's a Red Sox pitcher.
Okay, he's won, all right. I thought maybe it was a trick.
No, I don't. He never won a game with another team at Fenway. He was in the National League before. He played his entire American League career at Fenway.
Tim Wakefield.
Yes.
Really?
People would never guess that.
I was just shooting that out because that's the only one that I could think of that fit the category you were talking about.
Yeah. I mean, home runs, obvious. It's Ted Williams with 248. Yaz hit 237. Rice, 208. Dewey Evans, 199. David Ortiz has 153.
Clemens had to be around there, too, I would think.
Well, Clemens had been the all-time leader. Wakefield finally passed him.
Oh, okay.
Clemens and Cy Young both won 192 games in their career with the Red Sox. And, you know, most hits ever at Fenway, Yaz. More than Ted Williams, about 400 more than Ted Williams. Then Rice, Evans, Boggs. Most home runs, though, Williams. He had 9 more home runs at Fenway than Yaz did. All-time saves leader, 104, Jonathan Papelbon. Winning percentage, Lefty Grove won 76% of his games at Fenway. Pedro Martinez won 75%. Mel Parnell, 70%. Ellis Kinder, 68%. Herb Pennock won 67% of his game. I mean, you know, it's 100 years old today. The bottom line is, when they opened Fenway Park on this date, 1912, it was a complete afterthought. Why? The Titanic sunk that week.
That's a good point. I didn't even think about that. It would have been, what, about 4 or 5 days earlier?
Mm-hmm.
Never even crossed my mind.
Yep. So there you go. We'll talk more about that in a moment as we continue on WKOK after this. Welcome back to the show. Great to have you with us on this, the 100th birthday of Fenway Park, April 20th, 1912. Kevin doesn't quite get the charm of Fenway.
Oh, no, I understand it. I just think it's very interesting that Fenway Park is one of the rare classic ballparks that no one ever said is old or really ever got any big push to be replaced. I know, as you mentioned, in the 90s,
there was a huge push. John Harrington had plans done, the whole thing. They could not get the property in the neighborhoods around the park to build it, and that's why he dropped it.
Yeah, but weren't they going to go with the same style dimensions and everything? They were just going to update the seating?
everything's going to be the same, more seats and so forth. They were going to keep the current left field wall and a little bit of the left field grandstand as a museum. That's what they were going to do.
See, I mean, when I look at revamping stadiums, I think about what they did in Pittsburgh, what they did in Philadelphia. I mean, that was a total revamp. I mean, but there was never a – they always wanted to keep at least a lot of the history of what the ballpark was when they revamped – when they went through with discussing building another one.
So then John Henry, Larry Lucchino, and Tom Werner buy the team. And when they do, they said, no, this is a gem. Because I'll admit, look, there are a lot of times when I went to Fenway Park in the 70s and the 80s. You know, the 60s, you know, I was a kid, and all the times I went, it's like, wow, you know, grass is green, the wall, you know. But in the 70s and 80s when I would go, and even into the 90s, it was getting to a point, especially in the 80s and 90s, where I felt they were slapping green paint on top of green paint. Just really looked at it, and just that's my thought, was they're just slapping green paint on top of green paint. And that's why I'm thinking, I wonder, maybe they ought to build a new place. Because one of the thoughts was, besides building one next to this one, the other thought one was a mega complex with both the Patriots and a baseball park side by side. And that got bagged. News at the bottom of the hour on WKOK. Great to have you with us on this Friday on a blue-white eve.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. We're talking about Kevin's hatred of Fenway Park.
I never, ever said that. I do not want any emails about that. I never said that.
How about Kevin's confusion about Fenway Park?
Sometimes, yes. I just wonder, I always thought it was interesting that no one really, you know, had any complaints about Fenway and for the most part, and look at it as, you know, classic and not old. That's the only thing. There's not too many ballparks that are even near 100 years old, let alone the fact that one they don't consider old. Everybody looks back on it nostalgically and says, this is a great old ballpark.
So, I'm telling you, in the 80s and 90s, especially in the 90s, I started to look at it as old. Okay. Now I don't. These three owners, John Henry, Larry Lucchino, Tom Werner, have put so much money into this park. Capacity is 33,000 before. It's up 37, almost 38,000 now. They have luxury suites in there now. They have an additional deck added on. They put the monster seats in there. They put a family area in there. I mean, they have poured a lot of money into this place. And what was a place that I thought was older before and just putting green paint on green paint? No more. Mm-mm. They have poured a lot of money into it, a lot. And it really has, they have modernized it to the point where it's still the same in many ways, but it's far more comfortable.
I also like a lot of the writers now looking back and doing their retrospective pieces on the 100th anniversary of Fenway and the birthday and everything, and they go back and say, and the quaint poles that sometimes block sight lines.
Well, I mean, that's an issue.
If you're behind one, it's not quaint then.
You get behind one, it stinks. All right? They play old Huntington, the Huntington grounds on the Northeastern campus. The home plate is still there from the first World Series. Cy Young.
That would be awesome to see.
Threw a perfect game there. They beat the Pirates in the first ever World Series, 5-3. It was a best of 9. But, you know, there was a point where every seat in the place was a bleacher seat. I mean, every seat in there was a bleacher seat. Well, they've changed that since. And again, they've made a lot of changes. They've modernized it. And they have not let it go. They haven't let it go. The owners have taken this place and transformed it because they looked at it as a jewel and a treasure and not as an old ballpark. That's what makes them smart businessmen. Very smart businessmen. You know, and, you know, the pesky pole, you know, I sat there at the World Series. Incredible. Game two, Schilling bloody sock. Kevin thinks it was ketchup. I was there. I saw it. It was bloody. So that's another question I'll ask. You know, what are you looking for in the blue-white game tomorrow? What's your favorite park? What's your favorite park? What's the place that you went to that was your place? What's your place? The Vet?
No, I like Camden.
Why?
Because it was, in my mind, I mean, for me, the first ballpark of its kind that didn't look like the Vet, Three Rivers, Riverfront. I mean, I grew up in the cookie cutter era.
Sure.
You know, I grew up where every stadium looked the same.
Right.
And every stadium I went to was the same. It was a big round oval that they used for 17 sports. I went to Camden Yards, and that was the first time I saw a baseball stadium, in a Major League Baseball stadium.
Sure.
And that's all it was. That's why, I think that's why that one has a special place for me.
And Camden's still beautiful as far as I'm concerned.
I mean, the barbecue pit.
Boogs, yeah, barbecue.
Yeah, great stuff. I mean, there was nowhere else that I could imagine where I could have gotten that, you know, going to games and having that whole row of things as you come in from the gate. And now Citizens Bank Park is very much like that. I mean, if it wouldn't have been Camden came first for me, it probably would be Citizens Bank Park, because that has that same feel to it where it's not just a ball game. There's so much more that you can do while you're there. It becomes an event instead of just a baseball game.
Well, the most beautiful park I've been in is PNC in Pittsburgh.
See, I haven't been in that one. I'd like to.
And I've been to Camden Yards, and I've seen Nationals Park, and I've seen Wrigley Field, and I've been to Fenway, and I've seen AT&T Park in San Francisco, and I've seen the ballpark at Arlington, and I've seen Chase Field in Arizona, and Citizens Bank and Camden Yards. I've seen all of them. PNC is the most beautiful park I've ever been in. Concourse, sight lines, view of the city skyline over the wall. I mean, everything. It's the most beautiful park I've been in.
Now, wait a minute. Have you ever sat near the roof of a stadium? Seriously, now. Because that's
sat near the roof.
That's the test. That's a test of a ballpark. If you're near, and in Philadelphia, it's like the 400 level. If you're three rows from the top of the stadium, and you don't feel as though you're in the atmosphere, that's a good stadium. And I have to admit, I was up there several years ago, about four rows from the top of the stadium, and because of the way the seats are set up, you don't feel like you're 8 miles away.
Mm-hmm.
That was good. Yeah. And I've been in the Vet for Mike Schmidt night in the 700 level, about the same spot, and I felt like I was home watching the game from 2.5 hours away.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I got it.
That's what makes a good stadium to me.
Okay, now, today was the groundbreaking that took place for the Pagoula Ice Arena. Now, they've already dug the hole. The hole is gigantic. But they actually had an official groundbreaking today. The owner of the Buffalo Sabres and Rochester Americans, Terry Pagoula, was there. He's given $88 million plus another $14 for $102 total. Not bad. And earlier today, they had the groundbreaking. I was on hand. Rodney Erickson is the Penn State University president. He was there along with acting athletic director Dave Joyner.
Welcome to Hockey Valley. Well, today, I'm proud to officially mark the construction of the Pagoula Ice Arena. This is truly a momentous day for Penn State, our student athletes, the local community, and ice hockey fans everywhere. It is also a day that is long overdue. In fact, the discussions about ice hockey in an ice rink on the Penn State campus date back to 1911, when a letter to the editor and the Collegian suggested that hockey would soon take its rightful place among Penn State's great athletic teams. 101 years later, thanks to the leadership and generous support of Terry and Kim Pegula, hockey will have a permanent and prominent place in Happy Valley. Our goal is to make this arena and the vast array of activities to be held in it the national model by which all other programs are measured.
Thanks, Karen. This groundbreaking is an extraordinary moment in the history of Penn State Intercollegiate Athletics, and it's an opportunity to express the gratitude of our students, our fans, and the entire Penn State community for Terry and Kim Pegula's generosity and vision. The Pegula Ice Arena is impressive not just for what it will be, but for what it will do. Let's take a moment to visualize the facility itself. It will have two ice surfaces that will benefit not only Penn State, but the Center County region. The arena will be open 360 days a year to provide athletic competition, family entertainment, and practice sessions. It will have a 6,000-seat capacity, which includes a 1,000-seat student section. And to provide state-of-the-art experience for our fans, a cyber cafe will overlook the community rink. But beyond the physical space and state-of-the-art amenities, the Pegula's gift will create something even bigger, a new beginning for hockey at Penn State and across the country. It will provide us with the ability to move our hockey programs into the Big Ten and College Hockey America worlds of competition. Harry and Kim have a passion for hockey that is rivaled only by their passion for family and education. Today, it's my distinct pleasure to introduce Terry and Kim Pegula, who have set a new standard for philanthropy at Penn State and who have challenged our athletics program and our student athletes to new success.
That's Acting Athletic Director Dave Joyner. And then Terry Pegula got up there, and Terry had the opportunity to talk about his experience with all of this and everything. And we had an opportunity to hear from him. The guy is incredibly passionate about this, and this project meant a tremendous amount to him. Great. That's when they introduced you, Kevin. It was a nice moment.
I was honored.
Okay, I had a speech drummed up here. I want to thank President Erickson, Karen, and Dave for pretty much taking it out of my hands. Might as well tell my story about the last speech I gave. I was invited to Worthington Scranton campus to give their commencement address, and I also had a speech written. And I walked up to the podium, pulled it out of my suit pocket, and it was directions to the Worthington Scranton campus. Whoops. This journey, and it is a journey, began in 2008 with a question by myself and an answer from one Mr. Batista, which was, as we all know, usually longer than you wanted the answer to be. But it was educational, where Joe informed me that my question was, why doesn't Penn State have a Division I, have Division I hockey programs? And he informed me about state budgets and all this kind of stuff, half of which I forgot. But so from that point, the journey started. It was a journey that was delayed by the economic downturn in 2008, and also delayed by two business deals that I did in 09 and 10 that pretty much changed my life. During that time, the path was kept open by Graham Spanier, Tim Curley, Rod Kirsch, Joe Bautista, Cliff Benson, Peter Tombros, and many others. And it led to September 17th, 2010, when we signed the agreement to make the gift to Penn State. Our original plan was to donate the $88 million, build a building. And for those of you who aren't familiar with hockey, we call our arenas buildings. Whereas if you're going to a Steelers game or a Flyers game or a Eagles game, you, where's the stadium at? Well, we play in buildings. Hockey thing, I guess, huh? And fund scholarships, endow scholarships for the athletes. When we got our cost estimates back, our initial cost estimates, they were higher than we anticipated. So we upped our commitment to $102 million with the expectation being that there would be no compromising the excellence that Penn State's men's and women's hockey programs could achieve in the future. And I know that President Erickson and Dave Joyner will work hard to achieve those goals. I know that you are here because you have contributed either monetarily or emotionally to this journey. I want to rethank Paul and Nancy Silvas and John and Karen Davis for their commitments that they've made. And I want to thank all the people in the ICE campaign whose names are innumerable that are helping try to make this project come together. The commitment we Pegulas have to this journey was made possible by my involvement in an industry for 39 years that I love, the oil and natural gas industry. My start in that industry began right here at Penn State when I graduated as a petroleum and natural gas engineer in 1973. And I can't tell you how much that decision to go to Penn State and to become a petroleum engineer has meant to me. So from this day forward, our journey continues and will continue by constructing, finalizing construction, recruiting athletes, graduating those athletes into jobs that people like you and I perform, or better yet, let's start producing some National Hockey League players. And let's all visualize Guy Gadowski and Josh Brandwein handing off a Division I National Championship trophy to their players in the future. And even more so, we should all thank God and appreciate all the people who will work in the future to make those goals achievable and continue with one more step on our journey. Thank you.
That's Terry Pegula earlier today, and we'll talk a little bit more about this in a few moments as we continue on WKOK.
When you buy anything, isn't it best to see people who've been around for a long time, satisfying customers just like you all the time? Makes sense, doesn't it? So when you're in the market for a quality new or pre-owned vehicle, the only place to go is Sunbury Motors. They've been in business since 1915, partnering up folks just like you with a vehicle that best suits their needs and budget. Their service after the sale can't be beat. And if you like selection, there's none better than Sunbury Motors. Fords, Kias, Lincolns, Mercurys, Hyundais, Sunbury Motors sells them all. Their finance teams are unmatched. They'll be glad to help you secure the affordable option you want on any new or pre-owned vehicle you find on their lots. See the people who've been in business since 1915. Sunbury Motors Ford, Lincoln Mercury, and Hyundai in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com.
This is Hollywood, where we've added more world-class table games than ever before. Now you can play all the blackjack, all the craps, roulette, and poker you want, wherever you want. Plus, we've got a bad beat poker jackpot that could go up to tens of thousands of dollars. Your table is waiting. So start winning big at Hollywood, where the stage is set and the whole cast is here. From the crowd-pleasing chefs in the kitchen to the movers and shakers on the dance floor. From the dealers directing the action to the blockbuster winners and breakout stars. Here, you've got the lead role. Because there's no place like Hollywood Casino. Just minutes from Harrisburg and Hershey. Take I-81 to exit 80. Must be 21 or older to enter casino. Gambling problem? Call 1-877-565-2112 for help.
It was interesting listening to Terry Pegula speak. And he was talking about his commencement speech last year at Worthington Scranton. That was the same day I delivered my commencement speech at the Wilkes-Barre campus. So he's delivering at Worthington Scranton, and I'm delivering at Wilkes-Barre. So I started out my speech by saying that at Worthington Scranton, they get Terry Pegula today. I said, $88 million he donated. I said, the odds that their campus becomes instantly improved out of this, at least a shot at it, is dramatic. I said, meanwhile, you're stuck with me. I said, I'll deliver a funnier speech. I said, but I said, when it comes to the cash part, you're on your own. You okay there?
I'm good.
I'm putting something together quickly for the 4 o'clock hour, so that's
you are.
Yeah. Yeah. Something special.
Something special.
Well, I think it's special. You may think otherwise, but I think it's special.
Oh, wonderful. Let me guess. Will Power doing a time trial at Indy and we get to listen to it.
That is the worst impression of an Indy car ever. You need to work on that.
Okay. Crashed.
I was going to say, is that the one that made a right instead of a left at Indy?
It's really cool when you go to Indianapolis, how you drive in and you go underneath the stands on the track. It's really cool.
I want to play golf on the golf course just once.
I've seen the golf course. I haven't played on it.
I mean, I've always wanted to go to the 500. There's no... Excuse me. I've always wanted to go to the 500, but I've always wanted to play the golf course while I was going there.
Yeah. Oh, what a lonely sound. Going around 10 miles, going around the track 4 times for 10 miles by yourself.
One more race before the 500, as a matter of fact.
Oh, and where is this one? Brazil?
It is Sao Paulo, Brazil.
You're shocked I knew.
I am shocked you knew. I mean, big race for Rubens Barrichello. And
the Tony Kanaan Invitational.
Tony Kanaan as well. Elio Castroneves will be very popular in that race.
Brazil.
I am quite impressed that you knew Brazil.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, no. It's so important to keep up on these things.
But they you're right. They did do testing a few weeks ago. Actually, it was beginning of April. They did some testing on the new Speedway chassis that they'll be using at Indianapolis and one other. I think Texas is the other race. They're going to use the Speedway style chassis.
Good. All right. Let's see.
All right. There's my contribution.
Well done, NCAA President Mark Emmert. Found one bit of good news and all the bad. I encourage you to be attentive to something that was positive in all the scandals in a sense that it demonstrated a sea of change of responsibility. Okay. By the way, Bo Ryan has cut it down to 16 schools now.
Oh, good. That should make it easier.
Well, it does. It makes it a lot easier. It's down 10.